The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. Congress strikes a deal on funding for 2017 to avoid the shutdown. It doesn't cut funding for Planned Parenthood. It does provide $1.5 billion for border security. However, it specifically states it cannot be used for a wall. What else? It doesn't cut any of the money for sanctuary cities. This is what the Republicans can do when they have power? Oh, welcome to it. Thanks. With friends like you, who needs the Democrats? And Donald Trump this weekend called the North Korean leader a pretty smart cookie. Well, assuming that your smart cookies order their uncle's death by being torn apart by wild dogs, yeah, I'd call him a ruthless killer, but pretty smart cookie, I guess, might work in some circles as well. And I want to talk to you, about bigotry and how one handles real bigotry. If Glenn Beck, if you were gay and somebody didn't make your wedding cake, you'd sue them. No, I wouldn't. And I'll explain why again as I have, but I will put it into practice. My family has experienced true religious bigotry. And I want to begin there right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Cause we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Cause we are one.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. I want to show the left how principles work. I've been trying to get my kids into religious schools, and quite honestly, I'm going to look at a Jewish day school because I know the Jews will take my Christian children. I've been trying to get my kids into Christian schools here, and I've been looking at some schools, and we went to an IB school, which I would never put my kids in. Never would I put my kids in an international baccalaureate program. I mean, you want to talk about global warming, a borderless society, kids coming out very smart, but not with any of the principles that I believe in. I want my kids to have a rock-solid principle and religious-based education. In Texas, if you're Mormon, that's really hard to do because the Christian schools just don't want any of them Mormons around. Now, I want to tell one story, but in a positive way, and this is why I will give the name of the school. One of the schools, and it's a really great school, is Covenant Christian School. And it's an amazing school. And we went on the tour, and everything was great. And, I mean, it was a dream school for me. I mean, I talked to the science teachers. And how do you teach evolution? Well, we teach evolution as what it is, a theory. But side by side, we also teach the theory of intelligent design, and we teach them both with the same amount of rigor. Fantastic. I love that. Great. I went into their history department. Can you tell me, said to the teachers, and they didn't know who I was. Can you tell me who was the worst president in the 20th century without going into the last, let's say, four or five presidents? And who is the worst president in the 18th century? Immediately, Woodrow Wilson, Andrew Jackson. I'm like, I am home. This is my home. Loved it. I was called in as we start to go through the paperwork. I was called in by the headmaster, and he said, we don't take Mormon kids because we are a covenant school. And I said, okay, well, let's talk about that. And after, I mean, they went through our church's doctrine. They had board meetings. They really wrestled with it. And they explained, they said, look, we make a covenant with the church that the kids go to. And so we have to have certain doctrinal things in line, because it's not just bringing your kids in here. We covenant with the church because we believe the church is part of the community that the kids grow up in, and we all want to be hand in hand. I'm like, I completely understand. I don't think they were bigoted at all. In fact, the opposite. They were well thought out. They were gracious. They were kind. It was, and I couldn't recommend that school more highly. I wish my kids could go to that, but it's in their name. And they said, mm-hmm. we would break the very fundamental cornerstone of what we do if we did that. So we wouldn't do that with any church. It's not just yours. We wouldn't do that with any church that we didn't have all of the doctrine in place. I walked away from there really disappointed, because I wanted my kids to go to school there and I wanted to be a part of that community, but I completely understand. Then I went to another school, which is going to remain nameless because there's no reason to run their name through the mud. But they know who they are. I went and I met with their headmaster and I met with the founder and I said, first off, do you take Mormon kids? Yeah, of course we take Mormon kids. Okay, you do? For sure, because we just went through this. Yeah, no, we take them. Our philosophy is, you know, they're going to be challenged. Are you asking for special exemptions because we do a religious class? I said, no, I want my kids to know everything there is to know about other religions. Their choice of a religion is their choice, not mine. It's theirs. And I do my best to teach theirs. And I want them to come home and say, Dad, what about this? I want them exploring. And I said, so I'm not going to have a problem. I'm not asking you to change anything. And they said, oh, great. No, we'd take, you know, Jewish kids because, you know, Judeo-Christian, blah, blah, blah. They got the Old Testament. We would to say to the family, you know, we are teaching about Jesus. They said probably something from the, you know, Far East, Buddhist, I think is what they used, or, you know, Islam. They said that is not based on Judeo-Christian. So we think it would be too confusing for the kids. But if the parents wanted them to learn all about Christianity, okay. We go through the whole thing. And Tanya gets a call last week from somebody in the school, from the admissions. I'm sorry, but we can't take your kids. There's no reason to go any further on this, you know. And she said, "What? Why? Well, because, you know, I mean, it. You know, you're Mormon, and we just can't take Mormons. And you know, you'll be uncomfortable. Many of the parents will be uncomfortable. Your kids will be uncomfortable. They'll be confused. No, they won't. They won't be confused. We go to other churches. We, you know, Dad has lots of preacher friends. We did an entire day one-on-one with our host, Billy Graham. My kids didn't leave confused from Billy Graham's dinner table. Oh, yeah, it was just... My wife was so upset, she was rude. She just said, thank you, and hung up. Now, when I found out, I was really angry, and I posted something on Facebook. I was really angry. And I'm angry because that's just bigotry. What are you afraid of? I'm not afraid of exposing my kids to anybody's religion. I challenge them. I want them to know others' religions. And I'm not putting my kids in school to preach to your kids. I'm not the kind of person that is going to make everybody else conform to what I believe. What are you afraid of? So I was really angry. And somebody wrote to me, and this has given me, instead of going on a rant about this, this has given me the perfect opportunity to explain why bakers should be allowed to not make wedding cakes. There's a difference between bigotry and firm belief. The first school I went to, they have a firm belief. They know what they believe, and it's different than what I believe. But who am I to force my view on them? Who am I to do anything but sit down with them, get to know them, truly love them? We prayed together, we talked for hours, we're friends. I'll help them in any way. They won't let my kids go to their school. That's okay. They don't hate me. They don't hate my church. They just have a standard in place that they can't violate. I understand that. I appreciate that. The other is, yeah, we'll take kids. We'll take any kid. Well, no, you're out in the open. You're out in the open, and we don't want to look like we're endorsing that. They have other kids of other faiths. I wouldn't be surprised if they had Mormons in their school. Oh my gosh, they should check them for horns today. Not that I know people who go to that school who are of different faiths. Oh no. It's just open bigotry. So now what do I do? Well, I remain consistent with my values, except I don't even want to tell you the name of the school because it's not worth it. What are you going to do about it? I want to organize boycotts of the school. I want to change that school. No, I don't. I want them to know that I think what you're doing. I mean, Jesus dined with whores. You can't have lunch with my kids. You're afraid of my children? I mean, honestly, how are Christians going to expand their lot? I'm giving you the opportunity to teach my kids about your brand of Christianity. No, no, no. Because apparently people will be too afraid of my little children. What, converting your children? Confusing your children? That's ridiculous. And again, I'd rather be with Jesus, who was dining with whores. I want them to know it. I want them to know how I feel. But I don't want to organize a protest. I don't want to sue them. I don't want to make their life miserable. I think probably the vast majority of people that go to that school, have kids in that school, teach at that school, run in that school, also don't feel like we should be afraid of somebody else's religion. You can couch it any way you want, but if you're taking other children but not these children, that says something about you. And the biggest thing that has happened around our dinner table, as we've talked about it, is because I've called them myself, because I want to talk to them myself. I haven't received a phone call back yet, but I'm sure I will. I want to call them myself. And the conversation at the dinner table last night was, why, Dad? I said, because I want to say some things. And I'm not mad. I want to say some things. I want to ask them some questions. Well, you wouldn't put them in the school then, would you? I said, I don't think so. I'm not sure, but I don't think so. And the reason why I don't think so is because I don't want my kids to be surrounded by people who are bigots. But my feeling is not everybody there is a bigot. Because I met a lot of great people who knew exactly who I was and knew exactly what church I belonged to. I'm not exactly quiet on that. And so I don't think they would be surrounded by bigots. Maybe just a few. But what's the difference between that and real life? I mean, if you can't handle meeting a bigot, and you can't handle knowing how to deal with a bigot and just dismiss them for the small-minded, narrow people that they are, then you're not going to make it very far. But just to show the left that there is bigotry beyond your scope, you may not consider religious bigotry a big deal unless you're an atheist. But there is still religious bigotry. But you have to know the difference between having standards and being bigots.
So do you want a new law then that would guarantee that your children would be able to get into a religious school of their choice?
I believe this is a private institution that can do whatever they want.
But you have asked a judge to award you $137,000.
No, I have not. No, I have not. Mm. No.
Weird.
I have not. Mm. Personally, I believe that's the way you deal with bigotry when you find it. And I will tell you, thousands of people have responded to my Facebook post, and most of them are from Christians who say, I'm sorry, I'm not of your faith. I don't even agree with your faith. But that's just wrong. That's who people really are. And I have faith that we are getting better and not worse. Some people are still stuck in the 1950s. Most aren't. Know the difference.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program. 888-727-BECK.
You know, this really is the problem with our society. We're so cocooned that we can't go into each other's world.
You're talking about your kid going into the school. They're not accepting your children because they're Mormon, and this is a Christian school that doesn't believe in the same doctrine. And it's like, well, if, because there's that argument to be made that, hey, we should be accepting, right? Like, you should have people, and that's kind of what you focused on. But look at it from the other side. Part of the doctrine of, I would assume, the school,
evangelical
school, would be to say,
evangelize.
Yeah, evangelize.
That's
to say,
evangelical.
It's kind of in the name.
To be right, exactly.
Kind of in the name.
To reach out to people who don't believe what you believe and try to show them the light, right? In their in that view. So it's like you have a situation here where someone is coming and paying you to talk to their children, minds that could be
that's a perfect opportunity.
Right, because that would be wrong. But to teach
what they believe,
and
an opportunity to speak to someone who's making their mind up about what the world is and where it's going and what to believe. And you have an opportunity for 8 hours a day to sit in front of them, and you're getting paid to do it.
So I had a Jewish friend.
It's a dream.
A Jewish friend say to me, come to the day school, the Jewish day school. Your kids would be more than welcome. And he said, they would have to learn Torah. Yeah. I think they have to go to synagogue maybe once a week or something. I was like, okay. And they would have to stand when we pray. Okay. What's the problem with any of that? It teaches my children respect for other people's belief. We're not taking time to teach our children to respect something that they may not believe, but that others do.
So have we come
and
to
you, when in Rome, do as the Romans do.
Have we come to the conclusion now that maybe it's not the schools or the kids, but it's you?
Thank you for that.
Well, I was just thinking.
Anywhere else but Texas and maybe Oklahoma, that would be true, but not here. Back in a minute.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Hey, by the way, just real quick, for anybody who is missing Bill O'Reilly, Bill O'Reilly says hi and thanks to his viewers and people who follow him. Let's pick this up of where we were going here a second ago on not being able to come together, and what Stu said, and perhaps Jeffy has kind of hit on something. Perhaps it is me, because because I'm so out in the open. And so everybody knows. And so I'm making helicopter parents, I would make them feel bad. I don't think so. I don't think so. But the idea, if, for instance, if we did a school of conservative thought, and that's what we did, and a liberal would come with their kids who didn't have a history of litigation, and they sat down and said, look, you guys have great academics, and while I disagree with your point of view here, I want to enroll my kid in your school for the academics. The first thing I would say as a headmaster is, okay, is this a trick? No, no, no. We just really, and I don't mind if my kids hear, okay, because we're not going to change anything we do. That we do what we do. Will you sign a release that your kid isn't being indoctrinated? Because we won't change our curriculum. We're not going to single your kid out. We're not going to do any of that. We won't make fun of your kid. Your kid can argue the other side as long as it is honest questioning. Your kid, if he's trying to learn the doctrines of the Constitution, and he is, you know, coming to us and writing papers against the Constitution, if it is something that is supposed to be, you know, your thought, that's one thing. But if it's about the Constitution and he just says it's all wrong, we're going to give him an F. You understand all this, right? Yes. I'm not afraid of my son's views on climate change. My son understands climate change is real, and he'll come home with your non-climate change nonsense, and we'll talk about it at dinner. It will strengthen him because he will know the other side. Okay. I don't have a problem with that at all. Do you? Would you? Would you take that, student Pat?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you'd see it as an opportunity to potentially win someone over to capitalism.
Right. And even if that didn't happen, at least that kid would understand the truth about the other side.
At least they'd hear the argument.
Right. In the 5 years, though, that we had the school, there was nobody like that who wanted that experience. Nobody.
I taught a class for youth in church a couple of Wednesday nights ago, and I said, tell me what sanctuary means. We started with sanctuary cities. So what does that mean to claim sanctuary? And they said, well, that, you know, the police won't put people in jail, etc. I said, where did that come from? And they didn't know. And I said, did anybody watch, you know, the Disney cartoon of
Hunchback of Notre Dame?
What did Esmeralda call for? She ran into the church and cried sanctuary. It meant that the troops could not come in because that was God's house. That was God's ground. Sacred. It was like an embassy. I can go into an embassy in another country and I'm on American territory, sanctuary. Now, I'm going to have to live in there because the minute I step off that ground, I'm toast. So, what does that mean? Shouldn't this be a sanctified place? They always said sanctuary when they would go to churches in the past. So, should you be protected? Is this a safe zone? Well, yeah, because it's God's house. I said, I think exactly the opposite. There is no one in my life that has pushed me harder than God. There is no one who has challenged me on my beliefs more than God. This should be a safe zone where you know you can question anything and everything. You should be safe to question everything. Sanctuary. From the people who want to put me in jail, to silence me, to run me out of the community because I have a different opinion and I'm asking honest questions. I'm trying to understand what the Lord might say on something. Sanctuary. But there's no such thing as a safe zone. You should be challenged. You should challenge yourself. When was the last time you were really uncomfortable in what you believed? Well, when was the last time you got into a conversation and you realized, crap, I don't really have this argument down? And what did you do about it? Did you get louder? Did you throw up your arms? I'm not talking to you about this anymore. Or did you say, hang on, I don't know. Let me hear your whole argument. And I may not have an answer for you, but I'll find one. And did you go and try to find an answer to that argument so you would never feel that way again? That moment of uncomfortability is really good. That moment happened on Fox News, when was it, Friday? I came back, got a lot of heat for saying Richard Dreyfuss is really an amazing guy. We were on tour with Ted Cruz, or on, you know, campaign trail, and I spent some time with Richard Dreyfuss. I love this guy.
He showed up just to hear what Ted Cruz had to say.
Correct. Thinking, you know, me thinking that he disagreed with everything, but he's a strict constitutionalist. Now, he doesn't believe in all the same policies that I believe in, but he believes in the Constitution. Listen to him on Friday.
I know for certain that this kind of thing has been threatened by many presidents before, because I've seen it, and administrations often get states to do what they want them to do by threatening to withhold money. This happened less than a year ago in May of 2016 when the Obama administration threatened to withhold federal funds from North Carolina over the famous bathroom controversy. I don't remember any federal judge saying, well, you're not allowed to do that. Why?
Well, I have to beg off part of this discussion because I have withdrawn from partisan politics. I am a constitutionalist who believes that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights must be central and the parties must be peripheral. And
well,
I think
good for you.
What's most important for me is what you just mentioned haphazardly. We're over 30. Civics has not been taught in the American public school system since 1970. And that means that everyone in Congress never studied the Constitution and the Bill of Rights as you and I might have. And that is a critical flaw because it's why we were admired and respected for so long. It gives us our national identity. It tells the world who we are and why we are who we are. And without a frame that gives us the values that stand behind the Bill of Rights, we're just floating in air. And our sectors of society are not connected.
Well,
and
that's exactly
why
right.
Teaching civics, and I'm so glad you said that, because what's really important, Tucker, is that the assumptions of the left and the right are all skewed wrong. We have to find areas of agreement and areas that we share.
Pretty good.
How great is that? And the only way to do that is to look for higher principles, bigger guiding principles, and then sit down with each other and know that we're not going to agree on everything. And be able to be in each other's presence and not agree with everything. I guess that's hard for people to do. No, it's not. I think people think it's hard to do. It's what our parents and our grandparents did their whole life. That's what every American has done since the beginning of America. Thomas Paine and George Washington ended up hating each other. Still both patriots. I mean, Hamilton and Adams, Jefferson hated each other. They still somehow or another got it done.
And we're able to create a rapping musical together, which is really, I mean, what hard work that must have been.
I don't
as people who really opposed each other to kind of come together and just get together and rap, you know? That's something that I think
that's
is something we can all learn from.
Thing.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
So Ryan Seacrest is, he's got another job because...
Can this guy leave somebody else a job?
I really believe, I would like somebody to look into this. The joblessness in America tied directly to the number of jobs that Ryan Seacrest has.
So two sources with knowledge say, say the deal is confirmed. He's going to be joining Kelly Ripa. With live,
this guy.
Oh, but wow, he's got a lot of gigs.
He is. He could be the new Fed if we want him to. He has so much money. This guy. I mean, already he obviously American Idol, but I mean, he created and is executive producer of all of the Kardashian shows. So can you imagine just that?
Plus, he has his radio show.
Yep.
Plus, he's got the Countdown show. Plus, doesn't he still? Does he still do the E television thing, the E network thing?
Sure.
I think he produces a lot of shows.
I mean,
he's a huge executive producer.
I'm not sure there's a show he's not.
How much money
did
he make from American Idol?
Oh my God!
Oh, a ton.
The obvious one, but I mean, he made a fortune off of that too.
Yeah. That's over now, though. So now he's got almost no time. He's doing almost nothing right now with his day.
Two hours.
But I know Ryan, and I really like his attitude.
His attitude is,
I got a very short period of amount of time to make money. I'm going to strike while the iron is hot. Now,
he seems to be doing that.
That's what he said, you know, 10 years ago. And he was like, I don't know how long I'm going to be able to make money. I have absolutely no skills. So I'm going to make money while somebody wants to throw money my way. And he works his butt off.
He really does.
I mean, he
that's
is
crazy.
But I mean,
hardworking man.
There's so much talk about, you know, things like a stimulus plan and creating jobs. Just fire Ryan from all of his jobs.
Oh my God, that would
solve everything.
That frees up about 80% of the work.
And $600 billion a year.
Yeah. In this economy, Ryan Seacrest has created about 70% of all jobs, but he's taken all of them as well. It was Texas and then Ryan Seacrest that was job creators.
Oh, man, that really is incredible. So it's Kelly and Ryan, which is another job. I mean, how much are you making for that? That's a
lot.
At least
he'll be great at it, though.
Yeah, and that's the thing about Ryan Seacrest. Like, he's really good at
He's likable.
He's
a nice guy.
I've never met him.
So
I have
what's his face? The
Strahan.
Yeah, Michael Strahan.
He went to another.
He went to the other show.
Good Morning America. Yeah, that was a big deal.
That's unbelievable. He wasn't very good at Kelly and Michael or whatever it was called. They moved him to the.
Yeah, he got a big promotion.
Yeah,
they doubled his salary.
Good Morning America.
To leave. And that was.
Wow.
You don't remember this being a big thing where, like, Kelly Ripa was angry?
Oh, yeah, I do remember that. That's right. Yeah.
At least that was the reporting. I have no idea if that was true.
Jeez.
But,
what's he do at Good Morning America now?
Is he like a co-host?
Yeah. I think, yeah. He's like a big. Yeah. Yeah, a big
Good Morning America is still number one. Or is
you don't watch Good Morning America?
No. I'm kind of busy during that time.
Yeah.
Day. I don't know.
So did you see Megyn Kelly? You know her first interview? If you were hoping for first interview, Bill O'Reilly, which would have been unbelievable.
Huge.
Or Vladimir Putin, rumored first interview.
No, she's going a slightly different way. She's going to the Kardashians is who she's going to interview. Kardashians.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that's a weird first choice. Yeah. I mean, it's a huge
audience.
If
her second one is somebody like Vladimir Putin, then she's going the way
of
Barbara Walters. I can do hard news and I can do fluff.
The Kardashian thing is actually kind of interesting now. I hate to break this out, but I was watching.
Careful, Stu.
No, I'm really deep here. I'm going to go really deep. I was watching the Ellen 20th anniversary of her coming out episode.
Oh, how was that?
It was, you know, whatever. It was fine.
Okay.
But they were going through. They had my wife watches these, and she just watched like several in a row from the week. And one of the ones she watched was Kim Kardashian was on with Ellen, and that side of the family is very pissed off at Caitlyn Jenner. Like, real tension there. Like, I guess
he wrote a book, and he said that he was not complimentary
to Kris
to his ex-wife.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's pretty pissed off.
And Kim Kardashian said, like, we wish him I think he said, all his success in the world, but not at our expense. Like,
wow.
You don't necessarily see that often.
At our expense.
Yeah, because
they were cool with him.
I know, but
that's where it was for a while.
Well,
and I guess that's not
because
anymore.
Of the book. It's created some problems there. Mm. Yeah.
All right, back in a minute with the first 100 days of Donald Trump. We want to hear from you. How do you feel about the first 100 days? What did he accomplish? Where did he drop the ball? Call us now. 888-727-BECK.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. It is Monday. Lots to talk about. Want to get right to the phones. 888-727-BECK. 100 days of the Trump administration. I've heard the media. I've heard talk radio hosts about it. I want to hear from you. Good, bad, in the middle. The first 100 days of Donald Trump's administration. How do you rate him? Let America speak. We do that beginning right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right, we'll get to our ratings of the Trump administration in the first 100 days, but I want to hear yours first. Let's go to Joe in Arizona. Hello, Joe. You're on the Glenn Beck Program.
Hey, Glenn. How's it going?
Very good.
Hey, I'm going to give him an A+, and I say so because of the Supreme Court. I think he just, you know, assured a constitutionalist for the next 20 years, and I think that's the biggest part. And if he did nothing for the next 4 years, I'd be happy.
It's huge.
However, that doesn't necessarily mean, you might be happy. It doesn't mean you have to give him an A+. To me, if you say A+ or F-, I don't even want to hear it. No,
well,
offense
if you're a one-issue
to you, Joe,
person. If you're a one-issue person,
So there's only two issues.
I personally, what we're doing here is rating his first 100 days. And so I look at what did he say he was going to do? How is he getting more powerful, less powerful? Is he uniting or dividing?
Has he done most of what he said he would do, or considerably less
than what he would do? We're talking about the first 100 days. You can look at the end of his career and or the end of his 4 years and say I gave him an A+. Because all I wanted was Gorsuch. All I wanted was the Supreme Court.
I know, but I mean that's not the spirit of it, right?
That's not what this is. The first 100 days.
Right. Like you can say you're still happy with him and you're happy you voted with him and everything else, but if he gave you one thing and didn't give you the other things you wanted, it's not an A+.
Yeah.
Like think of it as a percentage. If he gave you 100%, has he done every single thing you wanted? For example, if right now you want if you like Obamacare, right, like it's still in place. So
that depends on how.
Right. It depends on whether you believe that the plan presented by the Republicans that Trump fought for was good. If you do believe that, then OK. But I mean, if you believe that what I wanted was a full repeal and he didn't offer that, you shouldn't give him an A+. That doesn't mean you think he's a bad president or done a bad job.
Unless you weight that one issue, at 100%, which he apparently does. It's like, okay, we're going to take the final exam, and the final exam will count for 100% of your grade. Right. Well, then you can get an A+ on the final exam, and you get an A+.
We're not going to argue with everybody who calls in because I want to know. I want to know what you believe.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Stu.
This is the way we view it.
Nice job.
But I want to hear how you view the first 100 days, Lisa
Stu.
In Virginia.
Yes. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
Stu, this is for you.
Okay.
I'm going to give him an A+.
All right, how come?
I think that if everybody just took the darn packs off and gave the man what he's supposed to do, I think we'd have gotten through a lot more than what he was able to get through. A lot of obstructionists within his own party as well as the Democratic side. It's actually aggravating as all get out.
But isn't that the case with every president, though? That you always have to face opposition. Yeah. The point of a president is to try to get through that opposition.
I mean, the reason why also, I heard a lot of people say they voted for Donald Trump is because he wasn't going to be stopped by the press or opposition. He was going to drain the swamp. He was going to do those things. So if he didn't, that's what every president faces. That was the argument that I heard about, you know, people like Ted Cruz. He'll never be able to get anything done, Glenn.
But again, Donald we're not going to argue with everybody on their grade, right?
Okay. All right. The next one says
okay,
A+.
So it's an A+.
Stu and I are both out. Wes in Utah. Hello, Wes.
Hi, Glenn.
Hi, how are you, Wes?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Very good. First 100 days. How do you view this president?
You know, I've given it a lot of thought, and I would seriously have to give him about a B-.
That is the dumbest grade I've ever heard.
No, it was Jeffy's turn.
I'm sorry.
why is that?
Fair. It's fair.
Well, I think that, you know, he made a lot of promises to get elected, and, you know, he gave us a lot of what we wanted to hear from him, you know, from conservative Supreme Court, fixing the immigration issue, and things such as that. But since he's been there, he's not really caved on all these things. He's tried to do what he's been able to do, but he's finding out that his hands are tied by our feckless legislature.
Wes, did you vote for him?
I did.
Yeah. Okay. So you were, did you have higher hopes and he's kind of let you down a little bit?
B- is a pretty good grade, though.
Yeah.
I think that's a good grade.
Absolutely. You know, I was really hoping that he'd be able to make a change in there. But I think, you know, what Bush said to Glenn in the Oval Office all those years ago, that no matter who has that job, they find out that their hands are tied.
Yeah.
And I think that's true. And it's really sad because the state of our country and the state of all the infighting has just paralyzed our government to not be able to do what the people need to jumpstart this economy and to fix the issues in this country. And that makes me very sad because I'm a patriot, first of all.
Thank you, Wes. I appreciate it. Let me go to Dave in Indiana. Go ahead, Dave.
I give him a B+ on the first 100 days.
Wow. Okay.
I didn't even vote for the man.
You didn't vote for him. Who'd you vote for?
Nope. Did not vote for president. I could not pull the lever for either person. If I had a chance to do it all over again, I'd pull the lever for Trump.
Okay,
my name was Ted Cruz.
Why is that?
I feel that he's approaching the media in the correct way. I like what he's doing with the Supreme Court. I totally agree with the previous caller about his hands being tied. I somewhat believe him. I think he's moving in a Reagan-esque way. I get a feel that this gentleman is open to ideas, and he listens to the people in his inner circle. Things that he's doing with the Second Amendment, the things that he's doing,
What has he done in the Second Amendment with the Second Amendment?
Spoke at the NRA.
Well, I know he spoke at the NRA.
But. Yeah, absolutely. Speaking at the NRA, I listened to that. I was unable to attend to that. I believe that he is going to leave them alone. And I think that the gun sales absolutely reflect that. You've seen gun sales decline because Trump is in the Oval Office and people are starting to relax. Myself, I'm not. I still buy my guns. My wife's not extremely happy with me all the time, but man's got to do what a man's got to do.
Exactly right. Dave, I'm with you on that one. Thank you so much for your phone call.
If you're in the gun company, you got to be thinking like, maybe we could get Bernie Sanders in because our sales are hurting. It is so. I mean, there's got to be.
Obama was the best thing, and he admitted it. Best thing that ever happened to the gun manufacturers.
The thing that bothers me is that we're accepting of, for instance, on that, now that he's in, Second Amendment is safe. Well, yeah, but maybe Bernie Sanders does get in next time. I mean, we have to look at...
Stay vigilant.
Yeah, and not only that, but, these executive orders, first of all, the executive orders have mainly been nonsense. They've been, you know, we're going to start a blue ribbon commission to... So they haven't been substantive, really, at all. And the thing that really bothers me is the president can say, I'm going to take away money for sanctuary cities. Well, the next president can come in and say, oh, I'm going to just restore it all. I'm going to start doing this. Well, the next guy can come in and say, I'm just going to reverse that. I mean, we can't have a dictator. We can't have a ruler up at top that is just making the laws that are good for half the population for, you know, for 4 or 8 years. And then the next guy comes in and reverses all of that. Yeah. We don't get anywhere.
Yeah. And you're kind of looking for, you're referring to the old kind, old timey usage of the word dictator, right? Because we think now of Saddam Hussein or Adolf Hitler. But back in the Philip Drew administrator, to bring up one of your favorite references, like, it was just a person who was at the top and
who just would dictate the rules.
Yeah, it wasn't like a murderer or anything like that.
No.
It was just someone who had the...
And how did he dictate the rules? This way, with executive power.
Yeah, and not in a vengeful, angry way.
No.
Just that this is the way it's going to be. Yeah. And we can, you know... I think that's the way Obama did a lot of stuff, is he would just say, no, I'm not enforcing that law. I'm not doing that. Well, no, that you can't do that.
To give Trump a break on this, though, and we discussed this last week, the executive orders he's passed, almost all of them have been, hey, we'll start a commission to study this. We'll have, we have to consider how to improve this. They're not like necessarily overreaching.
Correct.
They're just, hey, these are priorities of my administration.
Correct.
Which is, I mean, I don't have a problem with those. And in fact, most of them didn't do much of anything.
No, those are that's the thing that most of his executive orders are exactly what executive orders are for. Mm-hmm. It's the executive saying to the executive branch, I want you to study these things and come back to me. That's what an executive order is. He just televises and makes them into a big deal. That's just a memo. Hey, guys, can your department do some research on this and get back to me? That's a memo.
And that's why the pure number of executive orders is not fair to judge Trump on, I don't think.
No. All right, let me go to Michelle in Alabama. Hello, Michelle.
Hey, Glenn. Good morning, guys. How are you today?
Hey,
good. How are you?
I'm just fine. I give him a D.
Okay.
Why?
And Planned Parenthood. It's kind of my line in the sand. There's a lot of things, you know, for candidates that you can negotiate on and say, okay, well, we didn't get this one. But to me, 100 days in and Planned Parenthood is still getting federal funding.
Well, no.
How many babies a day is that?
Yeah, and the problem, Michelle, is that he just signed they just negotiated a new budget that will take us to October. And it includes the funding of Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
There's no wall in it. In fact, the money that is increased on the border specifically states none of these dollars can be used for the wall. Every dollar for Planned Parenthood is still guaranteed.
How is that possible with Republican majority? How is that possible?
Yeah, and it's not, I mean, it's him for not standing up and saying,
but
no,
it's Congress,
I will.
It's Congress, too.
Well, yeah, he has to stand up and say, no, yeah, I will shut the government down.
Yeah.
You know, against Congress, because Congress, they're just going, I mean, they're pushing him around on this.
Yeah. And shutting the government down is like you're giving the country bubonic plague now. And it's nothing of the sort.
No, it's actually
really good.
In fact,
it's a good thing.
It's a good thing.
Let it shut down. They can't do anything to us for a while.
Quickly, though, Michelle, I mean, if pro-life is your biggest issue, Trump just put another pro-life person in a big role.
Big role. HHS.
And also Neil Gorsuch seems very promising on the pro-life thing. I mean,
that's why he got a D and not an F.
There you go.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Okay. All right. Those are two big ones. I mean, the Supreme Court nominee being pretty seemingly, we don't know this yet, but seemingly on the right side of the pro-life issue for our tastes. That's a huge deal. I mean, it's a huge freaking deal.
But like she said, and that's what, you know, when we did this on Pat and Stu last week, that's exactly why I said Gorsuch brought him up a full grade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gorsuch brings him up a full grade for
with
me.
You.
With me. To a D.
Yeah, if he would have.
To a D. And he has a D because of the health care failure, the failure on the wall that he promised over and over and over, probably 1,000 times, mandated that we will have a big, beautiful wall with a big, beautiful door. And there's been no progress on that. The Dreamers.
No, in fact, it's the
other
way.
He didn't try to eliminate the Dreamers Act. The sanctuary cities fell through. Tax reform is lackluster, and like she said, he didn't eliminate the funding for Planned Parenthood. So all that adds up to a D for me.
Adds up to an F for you, actually.
Adds up to an F.
But then
Gorsuch brings it up to a D.
Gorsuch was a good,
really
was a good move.
Really
if he didn't have Gorsuch, I think he'd be in real trouble. I think he'd be in real trouble with his base.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Doing some of these.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. Let's go through some of the people who have posted their grades of Donald Trump for his first 100 days over the weekend on the website. Go ahead, give me some of them.
On Facebook, go like my page or you're a communist. So Michael Matai says C+. Executive orders were fairly good. And I like the Gorsuch thing. However, Trump loses marks for failing to spearhead the removal of the ACA, Obamacare, and generally hasn't managed to get laws passed to reverse the current trend.
Right.
Kristen Thomas, D, other than the Gorsuch pick, I don't see any difference from the same big government BS we have had for the past four administrations. Stacey Bracken, C, because he turned out to be what I expected. Do a few things like Gorsuch, keep the everything else is just keeping the establishment rolling. He's been Jeb Bush with an itchy Twitter finger. Just kind of an interesting
itchy
observation.
Twitter, that's good. Yeah.
Jerry Embry says a B, better than I expected. It is seemingly nominated great justice of the high court. Disappointed Obamacare has not been repealed, but I blame the Republican establishment for that one. It's weird because he did push for that, but that's I think he gets a break.
Yes, but it was a crappy bill.
Yeah, that's the problem I had with it. As time goes by, I have a feeling my score will go lower as he becomes just another do-nothing politician. Jesse says A-. He chose Neil Gorsuch. Everyone brings up Gorsuch, and that's universally praised, I would say. He proposed a repeal of Obamacare and almost got it through. He's drawn down regulations on business and has brought back confidence in the economy. He's also instituted tariffs, which I don't like, and attacked Syria. Overall, I think he's done a great job and has gotten more done than any other Republican would have been able to. Stacy says, I think he could get a B just for Gorsuch alone. 54 years old, lived through a few presidents, never saw any changes or promises kept in most of those, especially the first 100 days. So another positive grade. Mason Phillips would say a C. I wasn't a Trump or Hillary vote either. I voted for McMullen. Now I wish I did. Now I don't wish I had voted for him. Trump has been a mixed bag. I love the pick of our new Supreme Court justice. However, he isn't following through on a lot of things.
There seems to be a theme here.
Yeah.
They like Gorsuch. Supreme Court,
everybody Supreme loves Gorsuch.
And that's big.
I would add things, and I'll talk about it next hour, but I would add things that have been very damaging to not just the presidency, but to the credibility of the United States of America. For instance, calling Kim Jong-il a smart cookie this weekend. Do you have that audio? Listen to this.
Yes.
Listen to this.
I can tell you this, and a lot of people don't like when I say it, but he was a young man of 26 or 27 when he took over from his father, when his father died. Mm-hmm. He's dealing with obviously very tough people, in particular the generals and others.
Right.
And at a very young age, he was able to assume power. A lot of people, I'm sure, tried to take that power away, whether it was his uncle or anybody else.
And when it was his uncle, he had him eaten by wild dogs, which is, you know, that's good stuff.
He was able to do it. So obviously, he's a pretty smart cookie.
No, he's a ruthless killer.
Smart cookie.
There's a difference between being a smart cookie and a ruthless killer. That's okay. So the next thing is
that's part of his, you know, his syntax is just.
How do you say the guy's name from the Philippines? Duterte.
Duterte. Yes. Yeah.
Duterte. Duterte.
Duterte.
He's coming to the White House. He's invited a guy who has told the people.
What have they killed? 7,000 people so far.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
By the way, if you know somebody on drugs or is a drug dealer, go ahead and kill them in the streets. We are not going to say anything. It's nuts.
Yeah.
And we're inviting him to the White House?
Yeah, because we got to get everybody together against North Korea. Which, by the way, he's not been helpful on that at all. He said both sides need to grow up or something to that effect, acting like children.
I don't think I need to have Duterte. Is it
something
really?
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
I always feel like Jeffy's the right one here because Jeffy's obsessed with this guy. And if he doesn't have that name right, he has absolutely no value to humanity. Because he talks about this guy all the time. It's like his number one pet story.
How do you say his name?
Duterte.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't.
So
it's D-U-T-E-R-T-E. Duterte. It's not Duterte.
Okay.
See, this is the sort of battle I give Jeffy and Pat an F minus.
Producers, get you know, some credible journalist and look it up for us. Have the audio when we return.
The Glenn Beck Program.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Before we go back to your phone calls on rating the first 100 days of the Trump administration, can we please get a ruling on how to pronounce the name?
Yeah, we got a couple of different
This is the president sources. Of the Philippines.
President Rodrigo Duterte.
Okay,
Duterte.
So that's from the YouTube website.
You said Duterte.
You said Duterte. You were not even close.
You were not close.
And here's how it's pronounced in a news report.
Presentation. A one-on-one interview with President Rodrigo Duterte.
Rodrigo Duterte. Rodrigo Duterte.
What if he was being interviewed in Manigua, Nicaragua?
In Managua, Nicaragua.
I will say that you
Rodrigo Duterte in Managua, Nicaragua.
You don't see the it's so good. You don't see the visuals there, but she was underwater when she was saying that, which is why the
it really is
the gurgling sound. Yes. Yeah.
Really completely completely American accent, and then all
Rodrigo Duterte.
Really good.
Perfect example of that. Yeah.
I just can't believe we're bringing this guy into the White House.
Yeah, that's weird.
I mean, he is
not a good idea.
He's again, you know, well, if I need to say this, Kim Jong Un is a
smart cookie. Killer. Is that what you're looking
for? He's a killer.
Okay.
And so is what? This guy. So is the president of the Philippines.
Yeah, something like 7,000 people have been murdered in the streets
at his behest.
Yeah. This drug dealer thing.
As he said, anyone using drugs or dealing drugs, go out and kill them.
And people have.
The other one is Turkey is another big one where, you know, he's the president of Turkey, Erdogan, seems to be and is firing, getting rid of people who are opposing him. He's imprisoning people. He's grabbing power and we're embracing him. We're congratulating
Obama,
him on his victory.
Obama called him like a best friend or something.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah. No, I'm not. Yeah. Certainly not saying Obama did a good job on that one. And then that weird thing. Did you see the Civil War thing from this weekend?
No.
Where such a strange comment. He said that if he loves Andrew Jackson, which is, again, shows why Glenn is never going to, you're never going to like this guy. He's like, if he starts out praising Woodrow Wilson, you'll know.
Yeah, I mean,
Andrew
Jackson and Woodrow Wilson are two of the worst presidents of our republic.
Well, Trump loves Jackson. So right.
He doesn't. No. Bannon loved Jackson.
Yes. Okay.
And Trump, I'm convinced. I mean, last week, come on, guys. Last week when he said, who knew this job was so hard?
Right.
All you have to do is look at the pictures of the presidents when they go in and then when they come out to realize that's a hard job, huh? Mm-hmm. I mean, they look like Moses every time they come out.
Yeah, but he figured he was Donald Trump, right? He could handle it.
Yeah, and I do high finance all the time. No, this is different. This is the presidency.
But the Andrew Jackson comments with the Civil Wars, he said, I love Andrew Jackson. He said, Andrew Jackson, if you had Andrew Jackson a little later, you wouldn't have had the Civil War. He was a very tough person, but he had a big heart. He was really angry that what he saw in regard to the Civil War. And he said, there's no reason for this. Now, the problem was he died, 15 years
before
the Civil War? Couldn't have been upset about...
And what part of big heart am I missing? The trail of tears...
He didn't have a big heart toward the Indians.
Yeah, or the blacks,
right.
Or anybody that's different or got in his way.
Are you kidding me? He didn't kill them all.
That's true. I guess he could say that.
You're right.
I mean,
what a
big-hearted
guy that guy was. Andrew Jackson.
He even defied a Supreme Court order that said, leave them alone.
Yeah.
They can settle where they are. And he sent troops to move them out anyway.
And yeah, he's the first one to ever go into the office broke and come out one of the richest men in the country.
And to Pat's point, which I think is really interesting in this context, he said basically, what is the Supreme Court going to do to enforce it?
Right.
Yeah.
He said, I don't care what they said. To Trump's credit, he's had the courts rule against him multiple times.
Yeah,
and he's
not even the Supreme Court. It's federal judges.
Yeah,
and he's
taken that and dealt with it the way he's supposed to. I mean, people are like, well, he's criticizing the judges. Yeah, I mean, whatever. Who cares about that?
Yeah,
I mean,
I don't know if you're supposed to take it from the Supreme Court. I don't necessarily agree with that. I mean, the Supreme Court has been wrong many times in its history.
If they say a presidential order is unconstitutional...
Yeah, then you take it to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, but that was the Supreme Court that said it was unconstitutional.
The point with Jackson was he ignored the courts when they disagreed with him. Trump has been annoyed at the courts when they disagree with him, but has not ignored them, which is
positive. But then what you do is you go back, for instance, on the sanctuary city. I mean, sanctuary cities, there isn't a conservative within the sound of my voice that agrees with sanctuary cities. Sanctuary cities should face a penalty. So if they say, well, you can't do that, you can't, because Congress has the purse strings, okay. Then you go to the people and you say, you know and I know sanctuary cities are wrong, and your people in the GOP are not helping. They have control of the purse strings right now. And they're afraid that they are going to, they'll have to shut down the government. I want you to send them a message. Sanctuary cities are wrong, and pull the money from those cities. Even if he loses, at least he looks strong on the issue. Everything he's doing, he looks weak on the border. They didn't just not put the money in. They put money in and then said, oh, and by the way, Mr. President, you're not allowed to touch that. That's not the Democrats doing that. That's the GOP. And he's just taking it. And I think it's because he agrees. I think he didn't think a lot of this stuff through.
There's no doubt about
it. And then when he gets what he says, well, it's a lot more difficult than I thought.
He admits all the time he hasn't thought these things through.
Right.
That's what he said with NATO. Essentially what happened with China and they're devaluing the currency. Currency manipulation.
North Korea.
North Korean agreement.
The Iranian
deal. That's still in force, and he's leaving that alone.
And this is where I've had a problem, because you guys were talking about, we've been talking about grades this whole hour. We're still taking your calls at 888-727-BACK. What is your grade for the first 100 days? But part of it is
don't let us take you. And we're not going to argue with you if you really think.
No, well, we will, but we're going to apologize afterwards and say, sorry, I didn't mean to argue with you.
But I mean, I think it's okay to further the questions and ask a little follow-up. I would say, though, the issue with this type of stuff you're talking about, like with North Korea, or I can give you an example, some of the trade scenarios that he has not acted on that he promised to act on. Chinese currency manipulation is a good example of that, where he's like, oh, well, you know what? I actually kind of rethought that one and it's not really happening anymore and blah, 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 blah. Well, the process to get to that decision bothers me a lot.
Yes.
I mean, he was elected essentially without fully thinking these issues out. And I think that's a terrible precedent and a terrible idea. However, I think he actually landed in the right spot on that. So how do you grade that? To me, I think that's actually a positive. Some of the things I like of the Trump first 100 days is him not acting on the bad things he promised to do.
Correct. But I don't think defunding sanctuary cities is a bad thing.
No, that's a different example.
He was trying to do it the wrong way, constitutionally. Yes. The Congress has to do it. Okay, then use your bully pulpit and get that through.
Mm-hmm.
Do it the right way.
Right, and so that one I wouldn't... the point, though, is that his process, the way he talks about things, the way he handles some things in the press, not all of them, sometimes I really like when he goes after the press, but I don't like when he says one thing and then says the exact opposite later.
Here's what I think you don't like. You don't like the fact that he'll speak from just, that's what it is. And then he won't apologize for it. He won't say, how many times did he say fake news, globalists just want this NATO thing? How many times did he denigrate all of the people who disagreed with him? How many people did he destroy on the campaign trail? Because of things that they were all trying to say, that's not the way it works.
And this is
you're just not going to get it done. I'll get it done. Well, now you're in and you realize you can't get it done. Is there any humility? Is there any real true learning curve?
There's not. But NATO is the perfect example of why it's a complicated thing to give a grade. He came to me, it's completely impossible for a human being to get a question about something they don't know and come out with a fully formed, blurred-out opinion over a world issue. They asked him what he thought about NATO. He said it was obsolete. He has said, I just didn't know much about NATO at the time. So now I know about it, and it's not obsolete, right? I can't comprehend how any human being could do that. However, he landed in the right spot. His learning curve there, whatever you want to call it, landed him at a point where I realize that. So that bothers me, and it's why it complicates it. However, in effect, what I'm judging him on is his job performance, not his attitude, not the way he talks, not the annoying things he says.
I think you're mistaken, you can't dismiss it, but
I mean, for him to be, at the end of the day, what do we have? A guy like every other one of the past 10 presidents who said, you know what, NATO is crucial and vital to our survival as in the global atmosphere. And I think that's positive. I think he landed in the right spot. His process to get there is almost inhuman to me. I seriously can't comprehend a person who, when asked about a topic they know nothing about, would say it was obsolete. It makes no sense to me. But the way Donald Trump operates is he just, okay, what's my vibe here? Let me go super hard that way. His vibe was it was obsolete, so he said it was obsolete without knowing. He's now admitted he didn't know when he said that. He now knows, and he's now said it's not obsolete.
He did the exact same thing with abortion when he was pushed up against the wall. Yep. How do you punish people if abortion is illegal and somebody has an abortion, who do you punish? Well, there's got to be some punishment for the woman, right? Mm-hmm. Well, he hadn't thought about it.
Right, he hadn't thought about it.
And after he thought about it,
and he got counsel, right?
And he got counsel, and he got hammered by conservatives.
But see,
but
General Mattis convinces him.
Mike Pence convinces him. And
stop. That is all fine and good, except we still have a man who is in control of the military and in control of world events that the president can say one thing, and it can spiral into horrible things.
That's what makes me nervous.
And here's the problem. In no way has he shown a learning curve of humility, of slowing down on some of those things. If anything, he's doubled down on some of the fake news. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get you guys out of here, and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to do interviews with Alex Jones. Where's the learning curve?
And that's
what I've been wrong on a lot of things. And so maybe I better shut my mouth a little bit and do my homework. This is a harder job than I thought it was.
That's not who he is.
Yeah.
But, and that makes me nervous for the future. That makes me nervous for the future. And that's a legitimate reason to be nervous for the future. However, on those issues, if he lands in the right spot, doesn't he get deserved credit for that? Even if he came to it in a bizarre way that none of us understand.
Yes.
You're listening.
You're listening
to the Glenn Beck Program.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. 888-727-BACK.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Taking your phone calls at 888-727-BECK. The first 100 days of Donald Trump. If you had to give him a grade, Blake in Missouri, what grade would you give him?
Hey, Glenn. I'd probably give him the same grade as Jeffy's gotten most of his life, which would be a D.
You don't know that.
But here's the thing. I have to agree with what you guys have said, too. Like, yes, he's done some good things in terms of rhetoric, I guess, but in terms of just policy that's lasting, I haven't seen anything that's really lasting. And I guess what really added insult to injury for me is this story over the weekend when he was on Fox News, asked about his 100 days, and he started complaining about the system of checks and balances that we have in Congress and how, you know, it's just full of archaic rules and how, you know, it's just not a fair system and we've got to change things and that kind of thing. I'm like, well, which recent president does that sound like? It sounds a lot like Obama to me. And, you know, I didn't vote for Trump, and I will give him credit where credit is due. But for me, he is not someone who's principled, and to give him anything higher than a C to me is just way too much.
All right, Blake, I appreciate your phone call.
Yeah, he hasn't passed any major legislation, which is a big deal.
Yeah, and he's not really even consistently pushing for legislation.
Except the health care fix.
Yeah, but not really. I mean, that hasn't been a constant push on, we don't know what we're going to get. I don't know what his values are. I have no idea what this next thing is going to be. He didn't say, throw that out. You know, we're going to stop on this health care bill because it's, you know, one way or the other. He just gave up on it. He just wanted to pass something. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know, you know, again, he just wants to pass something. I don't know what his values are. And that's disturbing. And, you know, you have to hear the rest of this Andrew Jackson quote that that Donald Trump was talking about this weekend about Andrew Jackson and the Civil War. It is disturbing because he's also the guy now talking to us about being able to sue the press much more easy, and also talking about now checks and balances being reshuffled.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Well, Justice Gorsuch has been on the bench for less than a month, and we are now looking at Supreme Court Justice Kennedy's retirement. That looks like that is coming up soon. If you could get two conservatives on the Supreme Court, that is a huge victory. Now, let's judge President Trump's first 100 days, taking everything into account. This doesn't make him a good president, a bad president. This is not even a midterm report. This is just, how did he do on all of the things that you wanted him to do? Is he meeting expectations, beating expectations? Where is he falling short? How would you grade President Trump? Our grades coming up this hour, but we want to hear from you. The number is 888-727-BECK. We begin there with the phone right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Let me go right to Brian in Indiana. How do you rate Donald Trump? What grade would you give him for his first 100 days?
He's getting a C, and this is why. Funding for sanctuary cities, funding for Planned Parenthood, no funding for a wall, the reversal of NATO, same old policies on Iran, failure to unite the Republican Party. It seems like the Democrats have been getting more than Republicans.
Well, you sound like somebody who voted for him happily, too. Am I wrong on that?
I didn't vote for him happily. I was a Marco Rubio fan, but I wanted him more, way more than another Democrat in office. And right. I saw him as a strong leader, a strong world leader. And don't get me wrong, I love what he did in Syria. I love what he's doing with South Korea. I love what he did in Afghanistan. I love what he's doing with the military. Okay, I love Gorsuch. But the things I just listed are huge. They're huge. What are the Republicans getting? The Democrats have been getting more, in my view so far, than the Republicans.
Well, except for Gorsuch, I would have to say that you're right. The budget is still out of control. He is not doing the things he promised on the border. All of the things that you listed, which are real and substantive and lasting, you know, to reverse funding on Planned Parenthood with a Republican Congress. I don't know how you don't get that done. I mean, you want to talk about arm twisting, and this to me is verification that he didn't think through Planned Parenthood. He doesn't really care about that topic. He wants to do the right thing, I think, with Gorsuch for the evangelicals. But I will tell you, I don't have great faith on who he's going to put in next. Mainly because I think he fulfilled his promise to the evangelicals. I replace Scalia with a guy from that list. I told you I would do it, and I did it. Now, will he do it for the next Supreme Court justice? Especially when, you know, he said the reason why he wanted a conservative there is Planned Parenthood, I mean abortion. Well, then why aren't you fighting your own party, which you could easily win in the bully pulpit to defund Planned Parenthood? Why aren't you doing that?
I agree. All he needs to do is unite the Republican Party like the Democrats are uniting, but it seems like he has no desire to unite the party like the Democrats have done. And so the Republicans are just rolling over the Democratic demands, and it's sad.
Well, interesting. Shane, I thank you for that. I don't think he is getting good advice on uniting the Democratic Party. I mean,
the Republican Party.
Or the Republican Party. I think he is, you know, who is he listening to? He's listening to Reince Priebus. And I don't think Reince wants to necessarily, you know, unite with the likes of many of the constitutionalists. And I know that Bannon certainly doesn't.
It's interesting, though, yeah, because, I mean, the bashing of the Freedom Caucus publicly, saying he's going to go after them in primaries, going after the Heritage Foundation.
I mean, have you heard? They are now, it looks like Senator Jim DeMint is out at the Heritage Foundation.
Yeah, and now, the rumor is that it might be Steve Bannon that replaces him.
That is...
That would be...
Huge.
Bad.
That is huge.
Hugely bad.
Yeah.
I mean, the DeMint thing seems to be real. I'm not sure the Bannon thing is real.
Yeah, I don't know about that the part Mercers, of it either, but
you know, the Mercers, here's what could happen. Bannon could say to Donald Trump, the Mercers could say to Donald Trump, Don, you escort him out the door, and you're just telling him to go beat it? No, I don't think that's good. Now, you want to help support him becoming the head of the Heritage Foundation, and you work with the Heritage Foundation, well, then you got something. We'll talk about that.
They're going to give him a soft landing spot if they do get rid of him, you'd think.
Yeah. If they give him the Heritage Foundation as a soft landing spot, he becomes more dangerous. He becomes exactly like I said Van Jones would become. Remember I said, don't escort him out of the White House. At least there he's being held to scrutiny, at least by us. He's going to go out, they're going to wash him clean, and then he could have a bigger footprint. Look at what he did. He now has the footprint of CNN. What is Bannon going to have? The footprint of the Heritage Foundation and controlling what white papers are being written and how conservatives and what the conservative movement actually is? Holy cow. That's bad. That's really bad. Let me go to Dan in Georgia. Hello, Dan. You're on the Glenn Beck program.
Hi, Glenn. Hi. For foreign policy, I give Trump an A. I like what he's done with Korea. I like what he did with Syria. He's reasserted American dominance around the globe. Supreme Court, I give him a hopeful, guarded A because none of us really know if Gorsuch is going to be the real thing until he actually rules.
Right.
Domestically, I think it's an incomplete. I heard you use the term bully pulpit before. I'm not really sure he's got a bully pulpit because even though he's the president, he's got nobody in his party who's willing to help him.
I agree.
Not to mention the fact he's a minority elected president. He's a plurality elected president. So he doesn't really have a bully pulpit, even though he's got the title.
That's the biggest bully pulpit. His Twitter account is the bully pulpit, right? I mean, it's the ultimate example of it.
I think if he moderated himself, if he was smart, he would have gone in and done what he said he was going to do. Look, I'm smarter than this. This is show, and I can go and moderate myself. If he would have moderated himself and not just stop saying crazy things, and stop being such a bully all the way around, I think he could have rallied his troops around things like the border. And if he would have reached out to the Tea Party and the Freedom Caucus and said, hey, let's find, okay, we don't agree on health care. Where can I help you? Where can I help you? Let's work together. You work together with me on this. I'll work together with you on this. And he could have built a coalition, but he doesn't. He wants to go it alone his way. And I don't think that works.
And I think, like, for his benefit, I think he wants people to believe no one will work with him in the Republican Party. But he had, what, 200 votes on this health care plan? A health care plan he worked very closely with Paul Ryan on and pushing. He sent his representatives there to push for that Ryan health care plan. He tried to do all sorts of things, including promising to primary the House Freedom Caucus. So, I mean, you might think he didn't have everyone in the Republican Party willing to work with him on these things, but he had tons of it. He had the vast majority of the Republican Party working
difference
with him
too.
On that.
He has obviously a very short attention span to where, you know, how long did he do that? A week? 2 weeks? That's not...
No.
I mean, you're not going to move something as big as healthcare in 2 weeks. You get in there and you pitch and you keep going and you keep going and you keep going. He doesn't do that.
Well, some of that has happened behind the scenes, but you're right. Now, with his real direct involvement, they seem to have some... The House Freedom Caucus supposedly is on board with this most recent healthcare proposal. But if they had the votes overall, they would have probably already announced a vote. So that probably means it lost too many moderates and they still don't have it.
He's not getting the support.
There is a balancing
act there. He's not getting the support of the people. I mean, you know, he's got to get the support of the people. So the people say, I want this. And they start going out to their congressional reps and saying, I want this.
And we should point out that from the moment it was proposed to now, the highest approval ratings for Obamacare overall have been this very moment. Because as soon as you start talking about taking away people's stuff, they start liking that entitlement they didn't like before. That's just why it's so dangerous to launch these things. So it's going to be difficult for him to get anything through when it comes to the public perception, because nobody wants to lose their cash. This is why these things are problems.
Shane in New York, welcome to the program. What grade do you give Donald Trump?
A+, because I'm already sick of winning, and he said I would be.
Thank you. Amen.
Right, wait, is that a joke or is that real?
What? Yeah.
Is it a joke? Is A+ a joke?
Yes.
It is.
Oh, no, it's kind of a joke. I mean, we did get to see the mother of all bombs. That was pretty cool, though.
That was pretty cool.
Thank you, Shane.
You're right. I didn't take that into consideration.
Sharon, you're on the Glenn Beck program. Hello, Sharon.
Hi there. I give Donald Trump a sort of a weak B, but the only reason I give him a B instead of an A is that I think that he was a little naive coming from a business background, and I'm a Trump girl for 6-7 years, thought he should be president, at least a business person should be, but I think he was a little naive. But then I think that most politicians, even career politicians who have admitted once they get in, it's a lot harder than they thought it was in the first place to get things passed. But yet I'd also like to say that I think that a lot of people underestimate Donald Trump. And I think that when you think he's tweeting crazy or he's saying, and to say he has a short-term attention span, don't kid yourself. I think a lot of what he does is by design. And the only last thing I'd like to say is, if the left and Republicans that have worked against him in this first 100 days think that he's been crazy and dangerous, I'd like to see what he's going to do now that he's getting a grip on how it works.
Well, I'd be interested to see how that works out as well, Sharon.
It almost came off as a threat.
I know. It did.
Yeah.
It did.
But
and,
I mean,
I will tell you that, you know, saying that the presidency is harder than you thought it was is one thing. You're right. Everybody says that. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about missing his old life. He really thought it was going to be easier than what he did for a living.
Yes.
You know, as a business tycoon. I think this goes to
the country. How hard could it be?
Yeah, I think this goes to him not understanding or really paying attention or caring about noticing that this is not a business. This is government. You're not the CEO. I mean, we all say, I wish we had a CEO for the, well, no, you don't. You really don't. This is a republic, and we don't have a CEO. We have a guy who makes sure that the laws that Congress enacts are followed through. That's his job, not the one who makes all of the decisions. And I think he just thought he could go in there and say, oh, I'm going to make all these decisions. And he can't. He has this crazy thing called the Constitution that restricts him, which makes me understand why he likes people like the president of the Philippines. I think without the Constitution, that's the way Donald Trump would run things.
It's kind of fun, too, to see the people who, when the leader that they like does something they don't like, they assume there's a master plan, that this is all part of the plan, and he's just tricking the rest of us. A lot of people thought that during the Bush administration. I used to hear that all the time. Pat, don't worry about it. This is part of a larger plan. W's got a plan. He's going to, this is just a trick to Democrats into thinking that he.
No, we never do that.
No, and it never happens. It never happens. There is no grander plan with these guys. This is it. What you see is what you get. He's got no grand design here.
No.
I wish he did. I really do, but I don't think so.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com.
Hello, America. Let's go to Dave in Georgia. Hello, Dave. What grade do you give the president for his first 100 days?
Glenn, I would say like a B minus, maybe a C plus, but I mean, and I'll give you a reason why. I Georgia went for Trump, I know, but I wrote in someone else, someone who was more a security-minded person like myself. But anyway, Trump's the president, so I say, okay, let's see what he does. And so I like Gorsuch, don't get me wrong, but then we're at 6.8% into the term, and I'm not one for giving out a trophy for participation, but I'm not one for, you know, grading someone at 6.8% of the score here.
Look,
how they're doing.
I agree with you. I agree with you, but this is a deal that, you know, every president deals with the first 100 days. And Donald Trump.
And it's a landmark he set up.
Right. It's a landmark that he himself said, in the first 100 days, I will do these things. He's not done almost all of those things, and in fact, folded on some of those things. So, just grading him on the landmark that every president has had to do, and he himself set up this own thing. So we're just asking to judge him and trying to hear from the people of the country, not the media. I mean, it's the people of the country that matter.
So just putting on blinders and looking at these 100 days, I would say that there are three or four things that are good and that there are three or four things that are bad. So it's middle of the road, but it's still too early overall to be able to say yay or nay.
I agree. Right. So what are the three things that you agree with?
I like Gorsuch. I like strong on security. I'm a former military person, and that is something that I'm seeing that I align with. And I'm also interested in seeing sanctuary city. Well, I've seen some backing up on sanctuary cities, which is something that, I'm of Hispanic heritage. So I have this mixed emotion about, because my Latino side says, well, let's be a little lenient. And my, military American side says, wait a minute, we have to, put up borders. Our country has to be protected. And so I have a mixture of feelings with that. But I think that you do have to look at immigration as a whole, and that he is looking at immigration as a whole, and that we've seen illegal immigration drop drastically. And so those are the three key things that I say that are happening positive.
Dave,
the things that are negative, there are a lot of other things that may be you feel like he's dragging his feet on, but it'll happen.
Okay.
It'll happen.
Dave, thank you very much for your phone call. You know, it's really interesting. I asked before he was elected, I said, is there anything that he could do that would make you turn on him, Trump supporters only? And it's strange, because they're not. The answer was
immigration.
Yes, if he doesn't build the border wall.
Yeah. Yeah.
We now have a new budget out that specifically says no money can be used to build the border wall.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hey, you know, we've been talking about the first 100 days of Donald Trump. But let's just remember the first 100 days of Hillary Clinton would have included nominating women for half of her cabinet positions, just not because they're better or worse, just because they're women, investing in renewable energy, setting stricter rules for health insurers and drug makers, and pushing for greater protections for voting rights. She also would have been working on reducing income inequality with promises to raise the minimum wage, close a tax loophole for hedge fund managers, which would have never happened. And she said she was going to do that pretty much in her first 100 days. So could have been worse.
Much.
And she would have had a Supreme Court nominee that would have been a nightmare.
Do you want to hear the list of he had 28 things he promised to do in his first 100 days?
Okay.
Let's see how we're doing.
So, yeah, because I haven't given you my grade.
No, you haven't. I'm very interested to see where you would be. Term limits for members of Congress.
Not done.
Did not propose it.
No, he didn't. Yeah. These are the things he said he would propose and support.
Right. It doesn't necessarily mean he'd be able to get it through.
Yeah. Didn't propose.
So courts is the one I came up with this list. There's a bunch of lists like this. Mm. But this one they rate on a Trump scale from tremendous to total disaster.
which is kind of funny. There's nothing in between those.
There's tremendous, then nice. Politics, failing, sad, total disaster. So, and they all have exclamation points after them. Right. So they gave this one a sad because they didn't even propose it. By the way, that was one of my favorite things that he proposed in his first 100 days to do. And of course, he hasn't even addressed it. Hiring freeze on federal employees. Freeze hiring for employees with exceptions for military, public health, to reduce the federal workforce through attrition. They say ruling sad. Trump put this into action with a 90-day freeze on his first day in office. However, he lifted the freeze 10 days early.
And you know why? Do you know why he did? Because it wasn't thought through. It was too confusing. Mm-hmm. And the agencies were like, well, wait, what do you mean by important for national defense?
And right.
We don't even know what that means. Mm-hmm. So again, it was put together like a bunch of grade schoolers.
Yeah, and that's a lot of the problems we've seen in the first 100 days, which maybe you give them a break on. I don't know. They say, by the way, the federal workforce fell by 1,000 people out of 2.82 million. That's 0.04% is what that accomplished. Now, that was one I actually kind of mentally gave them credit for, too, I have to say. Number three, eliminate two existing regulations for each new one. He did propose that. He said he issued an executive order demanding this. Then another one calling for agencies to cull as many costly regulations as possible. He's facing a lawsuit from groups who say it hurts workers and the environment. But he's already gone beyond what he promised. They give him a tremendous on that one.
Yeah, that's
wow, good. Good.
5-year ban on White House and congressional officials becoming lobbyists.
He did that.
They say Trump has made improvements to some of Obama's ethics rules, but he's weakened other important ones, such as a rule that forced lobbyists to wait 2 years before getting a White House job. Former officials can also lobby agencies that haven't worked for, and Trump's done nothing to stop former congressional officials to becoming lobbyists.
Yeah, but that's not what he said. He did say former White House officials, did he not?
White House and congressional officials.
Oh, and congressional, okay.
Lifetime ban on White House officials lobbying for foreign governments. They give this a mostly positive rating. Then ban foreign lobbyists fundraising for U.S. elections. They give that a sad. Renegotiate or withdraw from NAFTA. Total disaster is what they say. Now, he did say he was going to do that. He was going to withdraw. Then he said he was going to renegotiate. Nothing's actually happened yet. I did see some lists that were being... Well, he renegotiated NAFTA as something he had accomplished. He hasn't even started the process yet. How does he accomplish it? Withdraw from TPP. He has done that. That is tremendous, according to this article. Label China a currency manipulator. Total disaster. Mm-hmm. And foreign trade abuses. Sad is their rating on that. Lift restrictions on American energy reserves. Tremendous. I think one of the things I give him good credit for has been energy and EPA. He's been pretty solid. I wish he'd get rid of this Paris Agreement. If he got out of the Paris Agreement, yeah. I would be really thrilled with him on that.
Yes.
He has not done that yet, and that he could just do.
He's not going to.
Well, I hope. He's been good on the EPA stuff generally, I would say. Pruitt has done a good job. He's made good appointments in that area. So far, I'm encouraged in that area. Allow energy infrastructure projects to move forward. They say administration has approved the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline, but it may be some time before work begins, if it ever does. He also had the Keystone Pipeline that he did approve. Again, I would say that one, I'd read positive, and they rate him a little positive on that one, give him the politics rating, which is above failing. Then you have cancel billions in payments to UN climate change programs. Sad is their rating into that one. That one should be done. Trump's budget, if approved, threatens dramatic cuts to international aid and UN funding. However, he won't have an easy time getting these cuts approved, especially considering some members of his own party, like John McCain, for instance, oppose them. However, I don't know that you can criticize him too much on that. If he proposes it, I think he proposes it.
No, if he proposes it and fights for it.
That's all he can do.
Number 14, cancel every unconstitutional executive order taken by Obama. They rate him as tremendous on that one.
Wow.
I don't know if everyone is probably right, but I mean, certainly DACA is still there. So yeah, I would not give him tremendous on that one. But he has overturned a decent amount through the Congressional Review Act, which, by the way, is when they say he's passed all these pieces of legislation, that's what they're talking about. It's really just through the one thing, the Congressional Review Act. He has not really passed any new, you know, legislation, but good. Pulling things back is okay, and we give him credit for that. Select a replacement for Scalia. Well, he not only selected him, but he got him through. Gorsuch, we're all happy with that one.
Tremendous.
Cancel all federal funding to sanctuary cities. Sad is the rating on that one.
Almost total disaster.
I think that's going to be a total disaster.
He has at least talked about that one, though, unlike term limits, where he hasn't even barely mentioned. Begin removing 2 million criminal illegal immigrants. They give him sad on that one. Trump has expanded the types of convictions that can lead to the removal of undocumented immigrants. However, so far that hasn't got him anywhere near his goal. Repatriations are actually down 1.2% from last year. Suspend immigration from terror-prone regions. We know that's going to be a total disaster with the courts blocking all those efforts. Middle-class tax relief and simplification act.
And that one I don't give him credit on.
No.
Because he, again, it's
done poorly twice.
Done poorly. I mean,
and it wouldn't have done anything anyway.
Right. It's the same as some of the other things he's done. They have to pull back because it was done like a third grader.
And, you know, the best argument for his legal stature when it comes to the travel ban was to say, basically, well, it wouldn't really do much. It wouldn't really restrict much. It wouldn't really do an awful lot. Then the question you lead to after that is, why bother doing it then? Because, I mean, there is a legitimate argument to say the courts are completely overreacting on that travel ban and trying to make it look like it's some ban of Muslims, which it's not, and it's some overreaching thing and changing all of our national policies, which it's not. It caps the number around the same it's been for the past 10 years. But A, he blew it, and B, if it doesn't change a lot, why did you use your political capital to go after it and then lose? So next one is Middle Class Tax Relief Simplification Act. So far, a little bit negative. He has proposed a general outline, but he actually proposed, which I thought was amazing, proposed an outline with less detail than he did during the campaign. Not only is it a worse policy with the rates much higher than the ones he proposed during the campaign, but also has less detail than the one he actually put out, which at least had income levels where these things would apply.
Because he is learning what Bush said. You know, there. I don't know who runs the show in Washington, but it ain't the president. And he's getting there, and he's, you know, if he was the guy we all hoped, he would be on television, quite honestly, like Eisenhower was. Remember, Eisenhower, I think, was the last real, honest, brutally honest president that had everything to lose when he gave his military-industrial complex speech. That was his baby. I mean, he's a general. And for him to come out and say, warning America, this could get out of control, and I want to warn you right now, we're going down a dangerous road. That was the last time. If President Trump was the guy that everybody hoped, he would have gotten on today and say, you know, at some point and said, you know what, I got to tell you the truth. This job is a lot harder because the president's told all the time, you can't do these things. Can't do these things because it's the same people. It's the same people that were here for Bush, that were here for Obama, and some of them were here all the way since Clinton. And they're not going to move. And I need the American people to help me move all of these roadblocks.
Well, you could kind of say that it was harder than he thought it was going to be.
Yeah, but he's not using the bully pulpit and he's blaming it all on fake news. It's not all fake news. It's not. But he wants a win, and he's winning against the press. And so that's where he's spending all of his energy, is I'm going to beat the press. Well, beating the press is good, but fixing the country needs to be a direct result of fixing the press.
We're getting towards the end of the 28 promises that Trump made for his first 100 days. Number 20, end the Offshoring Act, which is to establish tariffs to discourage companies from laying off workers. Again, this is another one that I would say is actually a positive that he has not introduced or taken any legislative action at all. He just did a kind of another fake sort of executive order saying they would study it, but nothing's actually happened. And to me, that's a positive. But they do relate that one as sad. American Energy and Infrastructure Act spur $1 trillion in infrastructure investment over 10 years. They put that as sad as well. It's been talked about. But again, I'm happy that that hasn't been proposed. School Choice and Education Opportunity Act that would redirect dollars to give parents the right to send their kids to the school of their choice. And Common Core, expand vocational and technical education, make 2 and 4 year college more affordable. Trump signed an executive order that limits the federal government's involvement in education, and the president has overturned a number of Obama's education-related actions, such as one providing guidance for transgender students. Trump budget proposal would cut the public school budget dramatically, and that's Quartz's telling of that story, while investing in private schools, but these measures do nothing for the affordability of college, plus no intervention has been made to expand training. So they kind of have that one in the middle. Repeal and replace Obamacare Act. You know about that one. They rate it as a total disaster. Affordable Child Care and Elder Care Act allows promises to Americans to deduct child care and elder care from their taxes. He has incorporated a child care tax break into the budget proposal, but no concrete action has been taken so far. And Illegal Immigration Act, around 25 of 28, by the way, that would fully fund the construction of a wall. We know that one's not happening so far.
In fact, that's
sad.
In fact, that's a total disaster. With this new budget, it specifically says no dollars can be used to build the wall.
Mm-hmm. Although it does add a little bit
more security
dollars.
But that's not the wall. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, correct. Restoring Community Safety Act. This reduces surging crime, drugs, and violence, creating a task force on violent crime, increasing funding for programs that train and assist local police. They read that as a sad. Restoring National Security Act expands military investment. They say that is generally a little bit positive on the rating scale. And Clean Up Corruption in Washington Act, ethics reforms to drain the swamp. Allegations of widespread ethics violations have been a constant in Trump's short time as president, and they give that a total disaster. So, I mean, I that's a mixed bag. Obviously, you know, Quartz is negative on things that I would be positive on and positive what things I would be negative on. But you see, I mean, they're looking at the promises, and most of these we've heard of. Some of them he's made some effort to accomplish, at least, but has not been able to achieve. Many others he has not even introduced, which, again, the easiest one out of there is for him to use his bully pulpit to push for term limits. It shows that he is trying to drain the swamp. It shows that he's pushing back against the people in Washington. The people are in agreement with that policy at the levels of 70 and 80% on both sides of the aisle. It's a really easy win, at least with the American people. You might not be able to get it through Congress, but it's a great thing to push, and I wish you would do it.
All right, I'll give you my score for the president coming up in a second.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
So if I had to grade the president of the United States, I'd give him an A in the Supreme Court. I personally could have thought of a couple of people that I would have trusted more than Gorsuch, but I don't, you know, we did our homework on Gorsuch and he looks good. You never know until he sits down, but I think he did exactly what he promised he would do. I'm giving him, I would say a D on pretty much everything else. Because I don't think he hasn't become the president of the United States. He is still that guy who is doing what he did during the campaign. He's fighting a war against the press. He has not brought us together. He has not brought us together on the truth, justice, the American way. And he is caving to the Republicans over and over again.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.